At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
I have a most twisted and demented and highly unnecessary and sad case for you today. You will definitely get your knickers in a bunch over this one. This is the Derby House fire.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none of you left.
We are all evil in some form or another.
I am not guilty. Does that include the time I stole a comic book when I was 5 years old?
That let the port stand for itself.
We are in a place called Derby today, which is in England. So I don't know a lot about the area, but I know that it is home to the Rolls-Royce manufacturers. And it's northeast of Birmingham and west of Nottingham, kind of in the middle of England. And in Derby, sat is what is called a council house, or what we would call subsidized housing. A series of duplexes allotted to low-income residents. And on the early morning hours of May 11th, 2012, a series of 999, or what we would call 911 calls, came in.
You're in the air. Still part of it.
One was from Mayred Philpott of 18 Victory Road, that her side of the duplex was on fire and her children were trapped inside. 6 children, to be exact. Neighbors came running out of their houses to try to help. The front door was fully engulfed in flames and could not be accessed. In the back, the house didn't have much of like a yard, and the area between it's like a garage or a shed area, had a fifth wheel trailer parked blocking the back entrance. So one of the neighbors tried to get onto the trailer in order to get up to the back windows on the second story. Mick Philpott, Mayred's husband and father to the 6 children, also helped calling 999 for help. He had tried to smash a window and he couldn't hear any screams or calls from the kids. There was way too much black smoke that was billowing from the upstairs, the smashed windows that were up there to try to get in that way. Firefighters arrived within minutes and discovered that the fire had essentially climbed the front stairs, trapping the children in their upstairs bedrooms. So they had no way to get out. In the first bedroom, 10-year-old Jade was found and she was brought out of the house and laid in the yard where firefighters and emergency crews tried to work to save her. Within the other bedrooms were found 9-year-old John, 7-year-old Jack, 6-year-old Jess, and 5-year-old Jaden. Each child was brought out one by one and laid next to one another while the crews used what would turn out to be futile attempts to save all of them. Now, 13-year-old Dwayne was found in one of the bedrooms. He was clinging to life and transported to the Children's Hospital in Birmingham, where unfortunately he died 2 days later. Mayred and Michael Philpott had a somewhat unique living situation and a lot of children. In fact, Michael had welcomed 17 children into his fold over the years. 2 days after the devastating and tragic fire, the Philpotts held a press conference thanking the firefighters and the emergency crews for their efforts in trying to save their children.
I say I can't express enough the police, the fire brigade, the ambulance services, because what we feel, them poor gentlemen from the fire brigade saw what we're seeing, you know, my heart goes out to them, because it's not just us that's suffering, it's them as well, it's everybody. It's one thing I would request, please leave my family alone.
Now, the police had immediately started a murder investigation into the children's death because it was clear that gas had been poured into the front door through the mail slot, saying, quote, initial indications are that it was deliberately set, and as a result, 6 children have been unlawfully killed. The Philpotts, particularly Michael, whom was known more as Mick Philpott, were actually pretty well known in Derby, mostly due to their rather unique lifestyle, the many children that they had, and Mick's media attention that he had started gathering since 2006. In 2003, Mick and Mayred had married after dating for about 3 years. At the time, Mick already had a few children. He had 3 children, David, Richard, and Michaela, with his ex-wife Pamela Lomax. He had 2 sons, Mickey and Aiden, with a woman named Heather Kehoe, 4 kids with a woman named Lisa Willis, who already had a son from a previous relationship. And then with Mayred, he went on to have Dwayne, Jade, Jack, John, Jess, and Jaden. So in 2006, Mick took to the media that he was requesting a larger council or subsidized living house because of his many children. And this request had garnered him not just publicity, but also a bit of criticism, because at the time, he was not only living with Mayred and their 6 kids, with a 7th on the way, but also with Lisa Willis as his mistress and her 5 children, who also had 1 on the way. No one in the house was really working, and yet they were collecting about £50,000 a year in benefits. Now, in response to the council telling him that basically no way, they're not getting a bigger house, he said, quote, they're just not good enough. I love my country, but at the moment I feel ashamed of it. I think the country is going down the pan, end quote. Now, during all of his press that he was getting, there were some background checks done on Mick that revealed that in 1978, he had actually been convicted and served 3 years in prison for attempted murder. Now, this revelation did not stop him from wanting his time on TV, however, and in 2007, he participated in a documentary called Ann Whittlecombe Versus. Now, the show had just made him look even worse when Ann Whittlecombe, who was the host, had found him 3 different jobs that he could do, all of which he never showed up for. And at the time, he was staying in the trailer that was out back, and Lisa and Mayred would alternate spending nights with him there. He also, during this documentary, used the word bitch to refer to both Lisa and Mayred. So Mick's behavior at the press conference regarding the death of his 6 children also raised a little bit of eyebrows with the police. Not so much for what he said or even how he said it, but it was more about what he didn't say. That there were no pleas with the public to come forward with information about who could have killed his innocent and very much loved children. Mick's background turned out to be more than just a little bit unique in the fathering of his children, in that he lived with his wife and his mistress, and it turns out that there was quite a bit of not-so-good stuff that was in his background. Now, Lisa Willis, the woman that was Mick's girlfriend and mistress at the time, She came forward after the fire to let police know that she had recently taken her children that she had with Mick out of the house. Mick Philpott was, in fact, a long-time asshat and douche canoe, starting in 1978 when, at the age of 21, he broke into the house of his 15-year-old girlfriend, Kim Hill, and stabbed her more than 12 times, along with her mother, who tried to intervene. Kim had had the nerve to try to break up with him. And now for that charge, he was convicted of attempted murder and grievous bodily harm. Thankfully, both Kim and her mother survived the ordeal, but she had suffered a punctured bladder, kidney, and liver. She had two collapsed lungs as well. And it wasn't actually his first attempt at taking Kim's life. He had shot her in the groin with a crossbow for wearing a dress that he felt was too short, and used a hammer once on her kneecap because she was paying more attention to the child that she was babysitting for than him. He was actually sentenced to 7 years, but he only served three. Then in 1986, he married Pamela Lomax and had three kids with her. Now, she was quite happy when Mick moved on to 14-year-old Heather Kehoe as his next love interest and victim. Pamela had found Mick to be domineering and controlling and also violent and was quite happy to be rid of him. She did, however, manage to keep custody of her kids, thankfully. Heather herself, who had run away from home to live with Mick when he was 37 and she was 16, had met when she was actually only 14, and she quickly had two children, both boys, and I guess having a daughter was something that was important to Mick, probably for reasons that none of us really want to ever think about. So he beat the crap out of her after her second son was born. He then proceeded to raise the boys that hitting on their mom was completely acceptable and that they should do it as well. So in 1991, he was convicted for assault causing actual bodily harm, but that was actually after a co-worker that he had headbutted for some reason. He received a 2-year sentence for that, but on a conditional discharge, so like probation only. Then in 2000 is when he met Mayred, who was at the time Mayred Duffy. She was only 19 and had just gotten out of an abusive relationship. She was ripe for the plucking and quickly moved into Mick's house with him. They got married in May of 2003, but in 2001, so only after a year of so-called dating Mayred, he met Lisa Willis, who was mother to a child from a previous relationship. Now, she was 16 at the time, and she was actually one of Mayred's bridesmaids at their wedding for them and was okay, I guess, with this 3-way relationship, as was Mayred. So she had moved in with them, the couple now making the household total to 11 people. And Mick managed to avoid any more scuffs with the law, at least until 2010, when he got a warning from the police for slapping Mayred and dragging her out of the house by her hair. I'm sure there were more incidents, but nothing with any legal consequences. Mayred got pregnant again in 2011, but not by Mick this time, so he forced her to end that pregnancy. And late that same year, there was a road rage incident involving Mick and a man that he had punched. He pled guilty in that case to the punching, but not to the dangerous driving that led up to the altercation, at least. Immediately after the fire, a charity was started called Catch Me When I Fall to help the family financially. And there was also a fund set up to pay for the funerals of the children, all of which were held together.
On a grey, wet day in Derby, a moving goodbye to six young lives cut short by tragedy. This final journey of the Philpott children would take them past the fire-damaged home where they lived together and where they died together.
Now, this particular part wasn't really sitting well with the police, who felt that Mick knew more than he was saying and was likely somehow involved, although trying to figure out a motive for killing his own six children was a little bit of a head-scratcher. But they smelled a rat nonetheless. Now, it turns out that Lisa Willis, who had recently left the family home, if we want to call it that, had a custody hearing the morning of the fire over her own children that she had with Mick. Now, none of those children, thankfully, were killed in the fire. So Lisa was quickly eliminated as a suspect, along with her brother-in-law, Ian Cousins, who was questioned about the fire as well, but I'm not sure what they thought his involvement might have been. So the police located a gas can and a glove that were found near the house. And after examining the clothes that both Mayred and Mick were wearing on the morning of the fire, they were found to have some gas on them. But it wasn't really enough for a conviction on murder charges.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
So what they did is they put a wiretap on the couple in this hotel room that they were temporarily living in until they could find a new council house. And it was rather quickly, after a few recordings of them discussing alibis and their own responsibilities in the fire.
What did you say? Tell me what you said to him, man. What did you say about Einstein's rent up ladders?
I almost couldn't. I'm no time went up the ladders.
What did you say about me trying to get in?
You tried everything you could to get in. I said to him I wanted to run through the flames up the stairs.
What did you cry when you were saying it? How bad?
It's not really, really bad, but didn't cry.
I'll circle.
It's the same exact same over.
Not said to move him while. I'm proud of you. You should keep on doing it.
What?
No, something. I do what I'm doing, Tanya. They've got nothing on me.
Fingerprint.
Fingerprint on the window.
That's it.
A few discrepancies. That's all it is.
So on May 28th, Michael Philpott, Mayred Duffy, and Paul Mosley were arrested on suspicion of murder. Well, wait, who's Paul Mosley? Now, he's just this guy that was with Mayred and Mick in their hotel room, who Mayred performed some sex act on, and then they talked about what they had all done. Now, I'm not really sure what Paul said that he did regarding the murders, but it was probably something like providing a fake alibi, or maybe he provided the gas or something, but he definitely knew what the purpose of the fire was. Anywho, Mosley's charge was later downgraded to manslaughter, but unfortunately, so were Mayred's and Mick's charges because they didn't have enough to prove that they had actually intended the children to die in the fire, which is kind of stupid if you ask me. Like, if you set a house on fire with six kids sleeping in it, I think you kind of intend for something bad to happen to them. Well, so what did they intend? Like, what was the purpose of setting the house on fire? Like, you can't get insurance money on a council house. So, like, what could possibly be gained by this? Well, at the trial, which started on February 12th of 2013 in Nottingham, Judge Catherine Thirlwall and the jury learned that the prosecution's theory, which was led by Richard Latham, was that the three of them had started this fire in order to frame Lisa Willis. So Lisa would be accused of trying to damage the property as well as endangering the lives of his children. He would, of course, get to play hero and save them all. And by doing that, Mick would get full custody of his children that he had with Lisa. And if that sounds utterly ridiculous, it is. However, none of them, I guess, anticipated that throwing gasoline through the entryway of a house, blocking the stairs with flames, would create a fire so hot that the entire house was engulfed in this black, thick smoke within minutes, and further igniting the varnish that was on the wood paneling that covered the walls in the house, which, of course, going up the stairs prevented any of them from actually saving their children and then leaving them all upstairs with all the windows open, which provided plenty of oxygen to a fire that was already burning incredibly hot. Additionally, the idea was that after the children were saved and Lisa was either in jail or at least denied access to her children, they would finally get this bigger council house that Mick had been wanting since 2006. Lisa had, of course, betrayed the family. Richard told the jury what she had done had challenged the very core of his attitude to his family and his women, which he would consider them his property, because she had stood up to him and was no longer in control. And that was something that he found completely unacceptable. And they were all convicted. Now, sentencing happened about a month later after the trial had concluded. Paul Mosley was sentenced to 17 years. He had to serve at least half of his sentence before he could be released. Mayrid was also given 17 years, and Mick, the mastermind behind this diabolical and ill-fated plan, was handed a life sentence with a minimum of 15 years. Now, before I go on to tell you where we are now-ish with this story and these douche canoes, I just want to read a little bit of what Justice Catherine Thirlwall had to say to these three, because I think she puts it into just better words than I can. So to Mick, she says, "You controlled and manipulated those women as you had controlled and manipulated their predecessors. They ran the household and looked after all the children. They went out to work. Their wages and their benefits went into your account. You controlled how money was spent. These two young women were not even permitted to have a front door key. I accept that the level of physical violence had reduced in recent years, but the level of control, aggression, and fear most certainly did not. Women were your chattels, there to look after you and your children, for that is how you describe them all. You bark orders and they obey. Witness after witness describe the dynamics in your household. You were a kingpin, no one else mattered. I am quite satisfied that for you, the principal purpose of your many children is to reflect on you. Their needs and desires and aspirations were very low on your list of priorities, if indeed they featured at all. You craved attention. You enjoyed the limelight. You courted publicly. You were and remain the center of your world, and it is plain that you require everyone in your life, but particularly the women, to make sure that you remain in the center of their world. Five of the children died on the morning of the fire, and the eldest died 3 days later. You so arranged your life and theirs so that everything was done for the pleasure of Michael Philpott. It has been said on your behalf that you were a good father. I cannot give that description to a man who acted as you did. Ever since the fire, your life has been a performance for the public and for the police, and then in this court. Your conduct has been punctuated by collapses and shows of distress designed to evoke sympathy where none is merited, designed to manipulate emotion. I accept that you have lost six children. I very much regret that everything about you suggests that your grief has very often been simulated for the public gaze." And then to Mayred, she said, "I accept that he treated you as a skivvy or slave. As became clear during the trial, you were prepared to go to any lengths, however humiliating, to keep him happy. But as the evidence came out, it was plain that this was not quite the position. This was put beyond doubt when you gave evidence. You pointed out that you had stood up to him in the past. That's why when he asked you for a divorce on no fewer than three occasions, you refused him. These were your children. Your first responsibility surely was to them. The risks were obvious and overwhelming, and anyone who has heard the harrowing wail from you on the 999 call can hear your realization that this had gone horribly wrong and your children were in mortal danger. But by then it was too late, and you bear the responsibility for that. You put Michael Philpott above your children, and as a result, they have died. And then to Paul, he just said, you enjoyed the attention that you gained from your proximity to the fire. You boasted of being arrested and bailed for 6 counts of murder. You, too, are responsible for the deaths of 6 children. As a result, you have lost all contact with your own children. Unsurprisingly, your former partner wants nothing to do with you in the light of all that has become known about your conduct in the course of this trial. But she goes on to talk a little bit about Mick Philpott's past, which I find she says very eloquently. The first relationship with which I am concerned was a relationship with a girl in her teens. You were in your 20s. The relationship was characterized by violence. There were repeated beatings. You were sure that she was having affairs and would come back from your posting in the army to check on her repeatedly. Eventually, she summoned the courage to bring your relationship to an end. You broke into her house, armed yourself with a knife, and went into her bedroom where you stabbed her repeatedly in a ferocious attack, which left her with life-threatening injuries from which she has never fully recovered. You were convicted of attempted murder and wounding with intent. It is clear that you have repeatedly used that conviction as a means of controlling other women, terrifying them as to what you might do to them if they did not follow your will. You subjected your first wife to physical violence throughout your relationship. She never reported anything to the police. She was too afraid to do so. She knew of your past. She believed she could not leave you. She simply hoped that this time would come when you would leave her. And that time came when you took up with a very young Heather Kehoe. She was 16 when she ran away with you. You were in your 40s. She spoke tellingly of life with you. Sometimes you were charming, always domineering, always in control. You controlled her through physical and sexual violence, threats, and emotional abuse. She, like 2 women before her, speaks of the lifelong damage she has suffered as a result of her relationship with her. You were obsessed with Lisa Willis. Indeed, it was plain to me that you were giving evidence over more than 3 days in the witness box that you still are. She left you, taking her children with her. She did not dare tell you she was leaving. She told Mayred Philpott that she was taking her children swimming. She and the children left with the clothes they stood up in and their swimming things. You soon realized what had happened and you set about trying to bring her back. The evidence shows that you tried sweet-talking her, you tried cajoling, and then bullying her. She would not come back. You could not stand the fact that she had crossed you. You were determined to make sure that she came back and began to put together your plan. Flowers were laid in tribute to the 6 children who died following the blaze. The jury was spared some of the most harrowing details of the removal of the children from 18 Victory Road. Mercifully, their deaths were swift and would seem without pain. No one would have listened to the evidence of the firefighters and not be moved by what they had done and what they had seen in their efforts to combat the fire and save the children. Your neighbors were traumatized by what they saw. Several of them tried to help. Their bravery was required as a result of your callous stupidity. It is clear that they have been shattered, as the local community generally. End quote. I quite like Judge Catherine. I think that she put all of that into a package that, although really difficult to digest, tells us, I think, what all that we need to know about Michael Philpott. In September of 2013, that housing duplex that the family lived in was demolished. There were talks of trying to put in a garden there as like a memorial, but as of today, it is just a rebuilt social housing complex. Mayred Philpott was released in 2020. Paul Mosley was granted parole in November of 2023. The parole board at the time stated, after considering the circumstances of his offending and time on license, the progress made while in custody at APAND and the evidence presented at the hearing, the panel was satisfied that imprisonment was no longer necessary for the protection of the public. Now, he was actually already granted parole once in 2021, but was sent back after he breached his conditions. I guess the second time is the charm, according to the parole board. Mick Philpott is still at the HMP Wakefield. He will be eligible for parole in 2028. In March of 2025, he was attacked by a fellow inmate who whacked him with a metal container of some sort, leaving him with a nasty lump on his head, but unfortunately he lived. And that was the nasty and horrific murders of Jade, Jack, John, Dwayne, Jaden, and Jess Philpott. And I am going to be back again next week with another horrible, awful case for you. In the meantime, you know what you can do. Hopefully by now you know how to reach out to me. A million other choices at outlook.com. And if you are new to my channel, thank you so much for joining. I appreciate all the listens, all the views, and feel free to recommend the podcast or the videos to friends, family, whoever. And as always, thank you so much for watching and for listening.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please leave a review on Apple, a rate on Spotify, or a comment on the episode. To support the podcast, you can find me on buymeacoffee.com or merchandise is available on Spreadshop. You can also receive bonus and ad-free podcast episodes on either Red Circle, where you can add a link for Apple, or on Patreon, which is linkable on Spotify. Podcast episodes come out each Monday, and videos on YouTube are posted on Fridays. You can reach me at a million other choices at outlook.com, where I try very hard to reply to emails in a somewhat timely manner.